This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, episode 200. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
0208 816 7691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and the boss. So congratulations are in order. I can already hear, boss, that the party is in full swing in the background. You're leading the celebrations for our 200th podcast episode.
Yeah, the production crew have just run through the banner. The crowd and the cheering and the dancing girls are all out. The cake's here. Sorry you guys couldn't make it.
Too busy, I'm afraid, mate, but I'm there in spirit and I've just had a very nice piece of cake and a coffee, so that's my celebration for our 200th.
Yes, well done to you guys. It is actually a huge landmark, so on behalf of the Pitch Vision Academy administration, I'd just like to congratulate you on fantastic effort to get to 200 shows, 200 fantastic shows of incredible education, information, insights. The way you guys keep bringing this stuff up week after week, I think all our listeners are amazed, very grateful, and it's a job well done.
It's been a real pleasure, and I didn't pick up at the beginning, obviously, but it just seems amazing how many we've covered in what seems like a short period of time, and it's almost as if it feels like 2 or 3 days passed before we sit down and have a chat again.
Yeah. And what a fantastic resource these 200 shows are. I mean, if you look at the everything that's been covered, and I'd encourage anyone who's listening to this show for maybe the first or second time to go back and look through the archive of all the previous shows. Mm. It's an incredible library of material we've got here now on the Academy.
And it's easy to sit here and just think that, we do this once a week and it doesn't really touch people, but it's been interesting in the last, I'd say, 3 or 4 months where I've been travelling around, how many people are coming up and saying, oh, I'm really enjoying the shows, and I've gone back over the last 2 years' shows, and which makes it really gratifying, and it shows that it is touching people, and people are actually taking some of the things that we're talking about and putting that into their own practice.
Yeah, I get people, when I'm in India, people often come up to me and say, oh, yeah, we know that show, well, I listen to that show, I use the drills. South Africa, it's happened as well, Australia, all around the world, really. We have a really broad listenership.
And as it's show 200, one of the things I wanted to talk about is the scoring of a 200, because it's now become something which is a possibility. You've seen double hundreds scored in one-day internationals. You've seen Michael Clarke score more double hundreds than anyone in a calendar year. And even Jason Gillespie's managed to knock up a double century. Yeah.
That's right. He certainly did. Good old Dizzy. Fantastic.
That. Well, I think the bat Dizzy used that day weighed about 3 tons. He had a mega slab of wood, a summer's bat it was.
I do remember an interview with him at the time saying, I started playing properly, and when I got to, I can't remember how many runs it was, 100 or something, I just started swinging and kept going.
Fantastic. Well, he was a great example, I think, in so many ways. And it was just, I suppose it was fitting in a lot of ways that he finished the back end of his career with a score that eclipsed many of his more well-renowned batters in his batting lineups over the years.
I mean, how realistic is scoring a double century at the lower levels? When you're talking about games which are played, at most over 2 days, if you're talking about, say, great cricket in Australia or in most parts of the world, it's one-day games. How realistic do you think, Gareth, is scoring a 200 when we see it at the top level?
Well, I think it is becoming more and more realistic. It's becoming more tangible to players playing at all levels, and even, just the language that goes around the top game, I think, really impacts positively upon club cricketers. So I remember an interview last year that Graham Gooch did where he was talking about Daddy Hundreds on television. And lots of people watched it, and then I went and worked with some players around the country, and they're all talking about bigger scores now than I was. I mean, when I played as a youngster, if I got 50, I felt really chuffed, but that's almost seen as a little bit of a stepping stone now, as opposed to being the target that you aim for. And it's great to talk to some of the kids here about the scores that they've attained and also the scores that they're looking to attain as well. And a double 100, I think, is so much more tangible because the world's expanded and it's expanded our minds.
Totally.
And we hear about people getting, you know, big scores in 2020 cricket now, so 150 pluses, whereas, you know, again, 30 would have been seen as a good score when 2020 happened in for the first time in 2003. So as the world stretches, as we see more cricket around the world, because it's a, you know, we can look at it on telly or on the internet or listen to it through this show, people's minds are being expanded, and as a result, the things that they're aiming for are higher.
And just bringing it back to the 200th episode here, we've got an old friend back on the show. I had a little chat with Kevin Sampath, who, for new listeners, was a host of the show back from episode 4. Let's head over to the interview with Kevin. Then we'll go straight into the yes-no round questions. We like to stay in touch with our friends here on the Pitch Vision Academy cricket show. And one of our oldest friends, one of our original friends, came on the show on show 4, Kevin Sampath. He's live in Sydney at the moment. Welcome back to show 200, Kevin.
Thanks, David. And congratulations on show number 200, double century. I don't know if I should raise my bat on behalf of you guys.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Maybe kiss the helmet or fist pump or something.
A fist pump,
but you guys
yeah.
have done well. 200. Double century.
Exactly. It's all about staying in the game and doing things the right way. We've scored our runs in the V, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. You guys are one of the top cricket shows at the moment, because if you look on iTunes, which I follow, you guys are up the top there, so doing really well. Props to you, Dave.
Of course, we have Mark on the show as well, who is just a font of all knowledge. And for those who are newer listeners who don't know who Kevin is, of course, Kevin came on the show on show 4 when we were looking for a co-presenter. We presented the show for quite a long time together, had a really good time talking about the difference between cricket in Australia and cricket in England. And it was a fun old time. So what have you been up to since we last spoke on the show?
It's been a while since we've actually last spoken, David. Last year, I actually went over to America and stayed there for about 6 months. Mm-hmm. I missed my cricket. And as you know, in America, it snows. I don't know if you know about Australia, but we hardly get any snow. Mm-hmm. And when it snows in America, it really snows down and you really can't pick up a cricket bat and a cricket ball and play in the snow. So I actually missed it a bit there, but learned a bit about the culture there and cricket's actually growing there, especially in the university I was studying in. People just played it for a bit of hit and giggle, but anywhere cricket goes, you're sort of happy to see it. So that was the first 6 months of last year. And then ever since then, I've just been playing cricket here with a couple of my friends in a B grade team. Mm-hmm. So for a different club that I used to play in, but it's sort of more about fun now than the seriousness I used to have 2-3 years ago. So I'm really starting to enjoy my cricket more now.
Yeah, well, you know, cricket has those two sides to it, doesn't it? It has the serious side and, you know, the aims to improve. And it also has just the social side of wanting to enjoy a good time with your mates and hit a couple of balls and bowl a couple of people out. And there's nothing wrong with either of those ways. It's just the way that you choose.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. So, what advice would you give for a young listener who's maybe in a similar position to you? You know, wants to has lots of different ambitions in life, but still wants to play a bit of cricket. What have you got? Have you got a golden piece of advice? Something you've learned in the last year or so?
3 years ago, when I was playing cricket, I sort of got tired and bored of it because it was really strenuous for me. Mm. I took it a bit too seriously and. Whenever I wasn't performing, it just get me down and depressed. But after I went back from America and came back, I found the fun aspect of cricket.
Yeah.
So I guess my tip would be always make sure that you're having fun. And that means anywhere from training to your game. So if you're training, make sure you have a fun aspect included in your training. So yeah, I guess that's a tip. Just make sure you're having fun because there's going to be times when you're going to hate it. And I guess anywhere from players from the club level to the professionals, they all go through those periods. So if you're having fun, I'm sure you'll never go through those periods.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, they do say if you enjoy what you're doing, you don't work a day in your life, do you? So, you know,
that's exactly right.
Yeah, you know, that's an important way to live your life, I think. So, well, Kevin, it was great to catch up with you. good to hear that everything's going well for you. And we'll probably catch up again in show number 400, shall we?
Yeah, thanks, David. And 400 is going to be a record breaker, isn't it? Being Brian Lara. So
yeah, exactly.
Hopefully I'll see you then.
Great. Cheers, Kev.
Thanks, David.
Oh, that's great to hear from Kevin again. I miss the boy. Now, on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, it's time to move on to the dreaded yes-no round, where our intrepid panellists may only answer yes or no to three controversial propositions. Are you ready, gentlemen?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, here we go. Question one. Wanting to win means wanting to risk losing.
Yes. Yes.
Question two. The greatest barrier to success is the fear of failure.
No.
Yes.
Question three. There should be more sides at test cricket level.
Yes.
No.
Well, that's rather categorical.
Okay, so we are going to head into the question section. I've given the mailbag to the boss this week, and he's rummaged around and picked out a couple of questions. And of course, the best of those two questions wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, boss, what have you picked out this week for us to examine?
Okay, I've got two good curly questions for you guys this week. The first one comes in from a gentleman called Cups, C-U-P-S, Cups, make of that what you will. His question is, for extended spells for fast bowlers, is it possible to build endurance in fast twitch muscle fibres by doing plyometrics for longer, so around 30 to 40 reps per set?
Okay, I'm going to give the short answer first, and then we're going to go into a little bit more detail. No, it's not. There was a couple of technical things in there, which I don't know if everyone is clear on. So what he's talking about is trying to build up a bowler's ability to bowl fast for longer periods by working on the fast twitch muscle fibers, which are the parts of the muscle that are responsible for fast movements, as you would imagine. And then there's other fibers called slow twitch, which are responsible for more endurance based stuff. Plyometrics is a way of exercising that, if you think about jumping, doing different types of jumps in different ways in different directions, then that gives you a good idea of what plyometrics are. And if you think about upper body plyometrics, you think about throwing a medicine ball and things like that, throwing a ball against the wall a certain number of times. The problem with the theory of doing higher reps is that power isn't something that requires endurance. Power is the expression of force very, very quickly, and then you stop and you wait and then you express it again. And that's what you do when you're bowling fast. So if you did 30 or 40 reps of plyometrics, doing lots of jumping around, then you would increase your risk of injury, because plyometrics are notorious for increasing your risk of injury if you don't do them properly. And B, it wouldn't be the same as bowling fast, because you don't do 30 or 40 very quick bowls and then have a little rest. So it wouldn't be specific to the type of thing that you're doing. Instead, what you're looking to do is improve your ability to recover from that expression of force. And that's really where you build up endurance. I know this is not your specialist area, Gareth, but what have you got to say on building up the ability to express power again and again like a fast bowler does?
Well, I completely agree with what you've just said, and it's fantastic that, I mean, it's a great question, because if one person's thinking about it, then I'm sure that there are many others listening to the show that would have been thinking along those lines. So what you've just informed us all about in terms of the repetitions and why we do plyometrics and what it actually impacts upon is fantastic information. So completely back you up on all of that that you mentioned there. I mean, the whole thing I'm going to try and add some value to is, in terms of training, take away the question, but in terms of training, there's a view nowadays that's becoming even more prevalent and will do over time, is that we are either better at responding to eccentric, concentric type exercises like deep squats and deadlifts and bench press and things like that, or we are better at dealing with plyometric things. And ultimately, we will maximize our physical conditioning by tapping into the one that's most prevalent within our the way that we operate. And rather than having one template, which we talk about a lot on this show, having one template that, that fits all. So we're doing a lot of research into that presently and getting some really interesting results out of it.
Garrus, what's the difference between the two? Or how would I know, for example, if I'm one or the other, which would suit me more?
Well, I'll give you a little tip. If you're sitting in a chair and you get somebody just to put their hand on your shoulder, okay, and not really put a massive amount of force on you, and you then try to stand up with that hand on your shoulder. If you can stand up very easily out of that chair without using your arms to leverage yourself, then that means that you've driven yourself up through moving your hips first. So your hips will drive up to enable you to stand up. Okay, that would mean that you are more likely to benefit from eccentric, concentric type training. Whereas if you can't move in the chair, then that means that you operate and you action your movement from the top half of your body, i.e. your head and your shoulders, and that means that you're more likely to get maximum results out of plyometric training. So that's the most simple way of doing it. So it's a really interesting exercise for people to do, and we do it a lot within our analysis and assessment of cricketers now, and it's only going to become more prevalent because the more we learn to understand about individual preference and the way that individuals are made up, the more this stuff becomes relevant. So yeah, it's a really simple thing. So you get somebody to put their hand on your shoulder, and if you can stand up because your hips drive forward and that initiates your movement out of the chair, then that means you're more likely to connect with eccentric and concentric types of training, which David has talked about and written about a lot on the site, so you can refer back into that.
Yeah, it's a really nice, and it's a nice easy test to it. I think, so if anyone listening, I guess, does that test at home, just come onto the site, search under those terms, or shoot David an email, and he can point you in the right direction of the extra information you need around that.
And I'm somebody who, if you put your hand on my shoulder, I'd find it really difficult to get out of the chair. Doesn't matter how much resistance you'd put on, I just would find it very difficult to get out of the chair because I initiate my movement by shifting my shoulders and my head forward to get me out. Now, when I was training, obviously we all did Olympic bar lifts, and I actually quite enjoy them to do them because I can get quite competitive with the people around me in it. And that's something that I do like. You know, competition is big as a motivator for me. But also, I'd find that over a period of time, my stats wouldn't go up massively. I'd get a good initial gain, but then after a while, I wouldn't keep developing. Whereas when I did some plyometric stuff, I noticed that my speed, and particularly my run threes and my 20-meter sprints, would go through the roof as a result of plyometric training. So in a basic way, if you look at the two fastest runners in the world at present moment in time, one being Johan Blake, the other one being Usain Bolt, they're both coached by the same person. And I can tell you that one of them is plyometric in the way that he operates, and the other one is eccentric, concentric in the way that he operates. And it wouldn't take too much for our listeners out there to work out which one is which based on the way that they run their 100-meter race.
If you're sitting on the sofa and doing this, is your ability to stand up with someone's hand in your shoulder improved or made harder if there is something good on television?
That's a really good question, and it's not nice to hear that we've replaced Berners with our insightful questions, boss.
I was just channeling Berners then.
Yeah, the answer to that is it depends what's on tape. Motivators can be very far-reaching and far-ranging.
What can happen as well, it's interesting that you talk about that, Garrus, because there are, I guess, one way of putting it is there's fast guys and there's slow guys in that there's guys who like lifting up heavy stuff and it looks like they're doing it slowly even though they're trying to do it as quick as they can, and then you've got guys who are jumping about and being very plyometric and energetic and all over the place, but if you are naturally better at one of those, then you tend to people in general tend to gravitate towards the one that they're naturally better at because they enjoy it more, they see the improvements more quickly. And so what you can end up doing, if you're not careful, is focusing a little bit too much on the thing that you're good at and forgetting that, you know, you need to be able to do both to some extent. So sometimes, and it depends on the individual greatly here, sometimes you have to go down the opposite route. And if you are a fast guy and you're good at plyometrics, you do a lot of plyometrics, then you do too much and you forget about doing the more slow guy stuff, the stuff where you're lifting up heavy weights. So it's important to make sure that you don't focus, whatever your strength is, that you don't focus too much on your strength and forget about that weaker area.
Yeah, absolutely. But it doesn't need to be balanced either, because, you know, if you split your program 50-50, you're only ever going to make a negligible gain in the eccentric, concentric stuff, if you're like me. But you can make a monster super strength out of the other. So you need to be really careful with that. And what we tend to find is that strength and conditioning coaches will have one way of working. And the danger of that is that you then transpose your own preference onto the people that you work with. And by definition, around 50% of the people that you work with will actually have a preference or a need for one type of training over the other. But if you're only going with one type of training, it's a bit like somebody who teaches everybody to drive by dropping their head and shoulder to the ball. Whereas we know from watching the likes of Peterson and Amlu, who are pretty good players, that not everybody bats like that. Mm. So that's the danger of coaching, is that sometimes coaches will put their own preference. So if somebody likes Olympic lifts and they're working with me all of the time, I will never, ever reach my potential physically. And that's where this stuff becomes quite interesting, because it means that we can tailor things around the individual as opposed to just tailoring our own preference onto everybody.
Whoever you are, you'll see improvements by doing more strength and conditioning work of either type. But yeah, if you find out what you're really good at, that's gonna help you a lot. But going back to the original question, I wouldn't say anyone would benefit too much for doing very, very high rep plyometric stuff, purely because your risk of injury is going up quite a lot. You know, you want to balance, you want to be careful how much plyometrics you're doing, purely from that point of view, if you're getting a lot of impact going through your body.
The next question is, I think, a ripper, and one I can personally relate to a lot. And it's about training in the Nats. And I think also it's worth mentioning that for a lot of our listeners, particularly players in India, in other words, playing in Nats is actually the primary experience they have of cricket. You know, they would play far more in cricket in Nats than they would actually get to play matches. So I think this is a really relevant question. It's from Paul. He says, I've been having some one-to-one sessions with a batting coach and I've made some decent progress overall. I thought that after a slow start, I had begun to click in the last few sessions. However, my last session was awful, and I felt as though I've gone backwards several steps. My question is, does form matter in the Nats? And when this happens, are there a few key things I should be focusing on, i.e. set up, watching the ball, etc.? Everything feels very complicated and awkward at the moment. I'm 29 years old and playing at a low level, but I'm keen to progress a little.
Well, fantastic question, and just brilliant to hear of somebody who may not be playing at the top level, but does want to get better. And it's one of the discussions that I often have with people. You know, how do we make things fun? Well, the way we make things fun is to help people to get better, because generally we have more fun when we're doing something competently and actually contributing to a team. So great question, Paul. Love it. Thank you very much for that. Does form matter in the Nets? Well, as you'd have heard me say before, really, I view Nets not necessarily as a place where you're trying out technical things for the first time, but somewhere where you're actually seeing whether those things can then be taken into a match context. Because a net is the nearest thing that many of us get to practicing what we do when we go out into a match. So, you know, if you've been working on a sweep or you want to develop a sweep, and you're testing it in match conditions within a net where it doesn't matter if you get out, but it's giving you some feedback on whether that would work in a game, as opposed to going in there and playing a sweep for the first time in your life against real life bowlers. So it comes back to the whole adage of skill development and skill acquisition happens outside of a net. We get that right to a point where we want to test it within a match context. We take it into the net to do that. And once we feel comfortable within a net, we take that into a match and we show it off. But I appreciate also that nets can be the only opportunity for people to practice. And I totally get that as well. So if you do get the opportunity to hit some balls outside, then that would be outside of a net, then that would be great. And then you can practice your game plan. Stuff would be ideal. But if you're not, then Andy Flower would always say that there's no such thing as form. He said he doesn't subscribe to the notion of form. And the reason why he says that is if you're not feeling as if everything's going right, there's normally a good reason for it. And you've mentioned a couple of the things that people generally go back to. Setup, your stance, is it balanced? Is it stable? Is it giving you the opportunity to move forward and back as you want to do? Are you watching the ball effectively? And as I've discussed before, some people need to watch the ball very hard and some people just need to let that ball come into their focus rather than focusing hard in the bowler's hand or out of a bowler's hand. You will find those things out for yourself. So generally go back to those basics if you aren't feeling in form. And I put inverted commas around that because a great influence on me being Andy Flower was somebody who said, form, there's no such thing as form. Generally, if you're not hitting the ball very well or you're not scoring enough runs, you need to look at your basics. So I think you've hit the nail on the head. Look at your setup. Are you balanced? Do you feel like you can move backwards and forwards freely from your position? If not, then adjust the width of your stance until you can do that. And secondly, on your watching of the ball, as I've discussed in a couple of articles recently, are you somebody who needs to watch the ball really hard, which is what some people do, or do you need to watch it soft? And the general thing is, if we don't feel like we're hitting the ball particularly well, we'll try and watch the ball really hard. And if that works for you, great. But for some people, that makes it even worse. So try those things. Give that a go. But if you can have a few hits outside of a net and then go into a net and put it into a match context in the net, that would be the most opportune way to practice to get that development that you're looking to achieve.
One thing I'd do for Paul, it would be maybe also working on a bit of visualization between nets and say, okay, how am I moving? Visualize you how your movement should be, and then when you go back into the nets, you may feel that you're more confident about where your body is going to go at any for any given ball as well, if you've sort of rehearsed it mentally as well.
Yeah, that's very powerful, being able to just think through, you know, the brain is amazing at tricking itself, and just thinking about playing is it activates the same parts of the brain as actually playing. So as far as your brain's concerned, there's no difference between thinking about doing something and actually doing something, which is an interesting area of how the mind works. Taking a step back from what Gareth's saying, give us some practical tips there. I think and correct me if I'm wrong here, Gareth, but I think what you were saying there was it's really important to, once you are out of that net situation, to be able to reflect on what happened in that net situation, pick out the things that worked, pick out the things that didn't quite work, and then once you've done that reflection, decide what you're going to be doing in the next net session, and then just put away all the bad stuff and just focus on working on whatever that thing is that you were talking about. Would that be fair, Gareth?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, review and reflection, I think, is something that we do generally badly in cricket. And in the little bits of stuff I've had within the business world, they do it a heck of a lot better, and it's something that we can learn from. Just taking 2 or 3 minutes to actually sit back and think about what happened in that net, what was good, what behaviours you want to get rid of, what behaviours you want to put into your batting, and then that'll give you the better chance of being able to do that next time round. And as we've said before on the show, it's important that we think in a moving towards something way. So what is the thing that I want to do as opposed to what is the thing that I don't want to do? So if you can put it into that context in your head, then it's more likely the next time you come around to your net or the next match that you play, you'll be able to put the behaviours or the action that you want to do in place if you're thinking about it in a towards fashion as opposed to a moving away from fashion.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be a great detailed thing, as you said. I mean, some people do like to, do prefer to sit down and write it all down and go into as much detail as they want and really get, you know, really get a Dear Diary thing going on. And other people just do better just sitting down for 5 minutes and thinking it through and going, okay, this is what I'm going to work on in my next net session. This is what I did well. I don't have to worry so much about that. And then they're done. But yeah, the actual process of doing it is what's important. And from personal experience, it worked for me a couple of years ago. I used to go into nets, not really think about what I was doing. And if I hit a couple of, got a couple of edges and didn't quite middle a couple, I would go out thinking, well, that was a horrible net. And then instead of doing that, I would reflect think about some good things that went the right way and thought about how I would improve on the next net. And that really made a big difference just on the psychology of how you walk into a net. So it certainly worked. It certainly, from personal experience, it certainly works. And I heartily recommend it. It's the 200th episode. The boss is on the show for a rare appearance. So, of course, we had to ask him to step onto the soapbox and talk for 60 seconds about a topic that he feels passionately about to do with cricket. So, boss, over to you. Your time starts now.
Well, coach, but Gareth, the thing I'd like to talk to you about today is backing away. Backing away from a fast bowler. It's a personal area of self-loathing that I have. That if I find myself backing away from a faster bowler, that I am disgusted with myself. I think people who back away really need to have a hard look at their character. What I've determined this year is that I would rather get behind the ball and be hit 6 or 7 times in the pre-season and get used to being behind the ball and then teach myself to get the bat in the way than I would to just keep backing away. Don't do it, guys. Just don't do it.
Oh, you've fallen short by 10 seconds.
Oh, see, I backed away. I backed away from the topic.
Well, that's better than Berners. Berners is normally around 4.5 minutes.
That's true.
With a couple of psalms, a bit of a poem, and, you know.
Psalms. Maybe, That is the end of the 200th episode, and what an epic it's been. There's been excitement, there's been tears, there's been laughter, there's been joy. It's a roller coaster of emotions. But we'll be back to normal again next week, and we'll carry on trucking, heading towards number 300, of course. But before we go, we need to decide on a couple of things. The first one being who the winner of the 200th episode competition is. So we had Cup's question on fast twitch muscle fibers and plyometrics, and we had Paul's questions on batting in the nets. Which did you prefer, Gareth?
Well, I'm going to go horribly against my usual conventional thinking, because I'm always talking about challenging ourselves, and it's the 200th show. So Cup's, despite a fantastic name, I'm afraid that Paul has won this week.
Oh, well, that... They were two good questions, so it was a tough one this week. So well done to Paul, congratulations, and maybe you can have a look at a couple of the net practice courses that we have. Gary Palmer's Four Angles might be a good one for you. Now, boss, if someone wanted to get in touch with their own question and have their chance to win a prize, what would they need to do?
This is what they'd need to do, coach. They'd need to call on UK 0208 816 7691, or perhaps the easier way is to send you an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
Yep, we can also accept your questions on Twitter at PV Cricket Coach if you keep it to nice and short, and we also have a Facebook page, so you can head over to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy and throw a question down there. We check that to make sure there's no questions and discuss anything cricket related on there. So almost up to 1,000 people having a look at our Facebook page, so that's quite exciting.
Good on us.
You can also subscribe to the show in iTunes if you want to listen every week. If you just do a search for Pitch Vision Academy there, you can find us there. And if you don't want to use iTunes, head over to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the podcast link, and you'll find all the details for how to subscribe any other way that you like. You can use our very clever little RSS feed that we have there. So that's all for episode 200. 201 next week, and back to boring old ordinary cricket show packed with advice and information and all the other good stuff that we do. So until next week, we'll see you next time. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, boss.
Cheers, fellas.
See you guys. Well done, guys. See ya.